Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you. My guest this week is James McLennan. James is the Chief Information Officer of Liberty Mutual, a Fortune 100 company with revenues exceeding $42 billion. As Chief Information Officer, James oversees an organization of roughly 6,000 employees and several thousand contractors around the world. This organization includes CIOs for each of the company's major business units and corporate functions. In this interview, James discusses the company's agile and cloud transformation, which has included a multi-pronged approach designed to eliminate or refactor legacy technology, send existing employees to coding immersion programs, have 90% of teams working in an agile fashion, and move from 1% to 25% of technology in the cloud, with a goal to reach 100%. We also discuss James' take on artificial intelligence, robotics, and augmented and virtual reality, how Liberty Mutual works with its different customer groups, what the company does at the business unit level versus the enterprise level, and a variety of other topics. And now a word from our sponsor. Technovation is brought to you by Fortinet. I recently caught up with Fortinet's Chief Information Security Officer, Phil Quaid, and he discussed the expanding threat landscape that IT executives and companies more generally encounter daily, and the ways in which Fortinet's security fabric can help.
Almost every organization faces an expanding attack surface caused by digital transformation, threat actors that automate sophisticated attacks, and a growing cybersecurity skills gap. It's more urgent than ever for security leaders to not only be technologists, but strategists that can enable business. The fundamental elements of cybersecurity are speed and integration. Combined with segmentation and access control, you can build a foundation that tilts the odds in your favor, defending at your points of strength. Fortinet can help. Our security fabric spans your entire networked environment from the IoT endpoint through your core and into multi-cloud environments. We integrate each security element to address today's growing threat environment, protecting the expanding attack surface and reduce complexity. This enables actionable threat intelligence to be shared at speed and scale, and automated mitigations that shrink risk windows. It's the cybersecurity strategy and technology used to protect the highest end systems, and it's now accessible to both enterprise and SMB. Just because you cannot eliminate cyber risk does not mean that you cannot manage it. Build your strategy around speed, automation, and integration.
Let's get back to our interview. James McLennan, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Good morning, Peter. Really appreciate you having me on. Delighted to chat with you today.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. Thank you so much. Well, James, I thought we'd begin with your role and your company, for that matter. You are the Chief Information Officer, the global CIO of Liberty Mutual. And I wonder if you could take a moment for those who might be less familiar to explain Liberty Mutual's business model as well as IT's role in it.
Sure, happy to. So let me start off with some of the big picture, Peter. So as some of your listeners may know, Liberty Mutual is a global property and casualty company. We insure everything pretty much from bicycles to satellites around the world. A major part of our business is in the United States, but we also operate in many countries around the world where we operate both consumer and small business, direct and through agent businesses, as well as specialty insurance, think airliners to oil rigs all around the world. So the major part of our business is in the United States, but as you know, many of the emerging markets provide great opportunity for us as we think about the growth rates in those parts of the world and as we think about growth for the company. As I mentioned, property and casualty is our domain. We focus in the U.S. mostly on auto and home in the consumer side, and everything from general liability right up to things like major cyber insurance, and on to, as I said, some specialty business all around the world. We operate in 16 countries with companies we own, and then our global specialty business operates in many more than that, mostly out of London and out of the United States. In terms of technology, it's been an interesting last several years. If you think about it, All of the discussion around digital transformation certainly has been a major part of what we've been working on here at Liberty Mutual as well. It started in the consumer end, as you might expect, as we focused on providing compelling and immersive customer experiences to all of our customers over digital technology, whether that's mobile or web, or in fact, any channel that they choose to do business with us in. And now it's now beginning to make its way to the high-end customers as we look at AI-driven capabilities to help us with new portal technologies and to help our underwriting and improve our service levels and help our customers receive the best experience they can in every interaction with Liberty Mutual.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And obviously, as you describe that, no doubt you're beginning to describe some of your purview as Chief Information Officer. To fill in any blanks that may not be covered with what you just described, can you give a broader overview of your responsibilities?
Sure. At Liberty here, we have a major technology group, something in the region of 6,000 employees with a few thousand more contractors that we use around the world. And like many companies, we have dedicated application development groups that are essentially embedded with our business partners. And we have a number of shared functions as well that offer the backbone that we use. So for example, we have a CIO of our global retail markets business and a CIO for our global risk solutions business, which is really all of the commercial and specialty businesses I mentioned. We have a global CIO for all of our corporate functions, which covers all of our legal, human resources, and financial capabilities, as well as a lot of the employee capabilities that we've been working on. And then we have several groups who span all of those. So we have an infrastructure and operations group that we call hosting services, which is responsible for our driving our journey to the cloud as we enable capabilities to move our infrastructure from our on-deck data centers around the world out onto Amazon and Azure and other global cloud platforms. We have a centralized Chief Information Security Office, which coordinates all of our security capabilities around the world and ensures that we drive in and design in both secure capabilities and data privacy aspects to all the applications and the data that we manage for our customers. In addition to that, we do all of the other things you might expect. So we've a global team that manages our human resource plans and our talent management strategies for technology, which are critical for us these days, as well as a group who manage all of the investments that we make and manage the funding models and look at our business cases. And, you know, as we look to provide transparency for our costs right down to the last cent, so that we understand and can make good decisions about where we make our investments and what we expect to achieve when we do so.
Very, very interesting. I appreciate you giving an overview of that. And as you say, there are multiple CIOs. I think I counted four or five there. Mm-hmm. And right. How do you think about naturally, I would think that the reason why those CIOs are in place is partially they become embedded with and have a foot both in sort of the technology world, but also in the factors that are of strategic importance of each of the business with which they are aligned. And I wonder,
100%.
How do you think about what should be common and where there ought to be autonomy business by business to do things that go away from some sort of standard of the organization? How do you get that balance?
No, great question. So you're right on. So what we do is we have a CIO for each of our major business units and for our corporate functions as well. And those teams are mostly focused on the application development and the customer journeys and the experiences that we want to provide. So in our global retail markets unit, for example, we have a team that are focused on everything from quoting, binding, billing, payments, claims processing, and all that that entails at every step of the way, focused on building the experiences, or as we call them, the customer journeys. That's a dedicated set of teams that build out those experiences in one country typically, and then we look for opportunities to reuse the best capabilities around the world. Notwithstanding that, of course, there are different regulations and different expectations of different types of service around the world, but we've been reasonably efficient over the last several years that exporting capabilities, whether it's nuances of interesting customer experiences from, like, say, the United States to an application that we use in our eastern region, whether it's in India or China. And we also can, sometimes we see interesting ideas in other parts of the world that we bring back to the U.S., oftentimes in data and analytics and robotic process automation technologies. So to answer your question directly, we have dedicated teams focused in each business unit to optimize these experiences we're building for our customers, whether the customer is the end customer, independent agents, or major brokers. And then there are several things that we do shared. So let me talk a little bit about that as well. In the shared area, I mentioned the security stuff. So we don't want to duplicate our security stance. We want to make sure that that's even and controlled around the world, whether it's in the US or any of the other countries we operate in. But we also look for opportunities to make sure that we understand what are the platforms we might be able to share, what are the capabilities we can share. So we're trying to build out a range of services. We're speaking a lot recently about building out API management platforms where every part of our business can deploy and catalog APIs that will allow us to play a more prevalent role in the future of ecosystems. So clearly, Peter, as major companies build out new models into the future, we may have new partners and participate in different ways. And in order to do that, one of the key ingredients we see there is to build out an API management platform where each of our businesses can assign and can catalog and register APIs that then can be consumed by many different types of partners, and we can control how we do that. We think that's going to be a critical part for our future, and so that's a key area where we're sharing. We also look to other aspects of technology that are not necessarily differentiating. So our ability to store documents in the cloud, to store them and retrieve them, and several other services like that, where we look to say, okay, how can we share, but we constantly strive for that balance of efficiency versus effectiveness, so to speak, where we want to share as much as we can. So we want to be global where we can be, but local where it makes a difference and where the differentiation is required for either the customer experience or the expectations in the market we're operating in.
Very interesting. You've alluded a couple of times to customer journeys and their importance differentiating how you think about the use of technology. You also mentioned a moment ago, one of the things that is a complexity, certainly, of your business model, in that you, of course, have customers who are the ultimate consumers of your products, the people who are buying the P&C insurance, for example. Mm-hmm. But you also have the independent agents, the brokers who you alluded to as well. And they are, quote-unquote, customers of a sort as well. And so I wonder how you think about and differentiate between the customer journeys along those three major categories.
Sure. Well, if I first of all take the end customer, the end consumer, clearly many of our customers, particularly, you know, the millennial generation and folks like that, they like to get on their mobile phone. They want the quote. They want it now. If they have a problem that they need to file a claim, they want to be able to do that electronically, whether that's open up our claim first notice of loss app. The app will immediately, you know, help them register with us where they are. They can take pictures, upload them. They're automatically inserted into the claim creation process. And the experience is entirely digital, right? And over the last several years, we've been recognized by the usual suspects, whether that's JD Power or others, as being best in class in terms of our ability to provide both e-capabilities on the web and mobile capabilities in our apps, to be able to either provide quoting and sales capabilities, service capabilities, or claims capabilities. So that's been a major growing part of our business over the last several years as the millennials grow and we meet their expectations. But that's just one channel. We pride ourselves on being able to meet our customers in an omni-channel fashion. And over the last, a lot of people, a decade ago might have predicted the demise of the independent agent channel as a major distribution channel to be able to sell insurance to, consumers in the U.S. But we have found that has not come to pass, not by a long shot. our Safeco brand, which is our independent agent channel here in the United States, continues to be a major distribution for us. I think it's in the region of a $10 billion business for us the last time we looked. And you're exactly right. Our independent agents are our customers as well. And we look to provide those guys with the same compelling experience, whether that's, again, on a mobile platform or through a portal where we can help them run their business as effectively as possible, and we can be the best partner for them. Obviously, it comes with the additional capabilities. Many times we help them provide best service to their customers, which are obviously our end customers as well. But that's a key channel for us. As with many Fortune 100 companies dealing with consumers, we regard our call center platforms as critical channels as well, Peter, and we've been upgrading those, so to speak, over the last several years by not alone providing the best service platforms we can for our agents and associates in the call centers, but we've also been augmenting them with chatbot technology and AI-driven predictions for what our customers want, and been pretty successful recently in helping our claim centers handle many calls related to things like rental car capabilities and options that our customers may need when they're dealing with us on a claim. So we've been upgrading that channel as well. And finally, at the upper end, where we deal with the major brokers on a global basis, really these guys are interface in many cases to our major customers around the world, and they oftentimes require not alone complex but dedicated and customized services. So we're building out all kinds of capabilities for those guys as well with new technology, so that they can come to our portals, they can provide information about, you know, opportunities or submissions that they have, and we get to interface with them and interact in real time, modify our quotes and our contract details on the fly with those guys. So that used to be all done over telephone and fax and emails, and we're now beginning to take out a lot of the friction in those capabilities as well. As you might imagine, you know, as we look at our distribution channels, it's critical that we know where we're meeting our customers, who in every part of our business is interacting with their customers, whether they're agents or brokers or end customers. So for many parts of these, we build out capabilities on platforms like Salesforce.com, which give us insight into our opportunities and how we're dealing with our customers, how we're communicating with them, and we look for holes and we can plug those as we go as well. So really critical that we understand where our customers are, and in many cases we need to do that on a global basis. So clearly a big part of our business is in the US, but there are many customers that we deal with globally, and they operate in international markets, we need to be able to meet them everywhere they do business.
Very interesting. I appreciate that overview. You know, you mentioned earlier that yours is a Fortune 100 company. You're north of $40 billion in revenue. You're also, later this year, you will celebrate your 107th birthday as a company. So quite a long and storied history as an organization. And, you know, having gotten to know a number of organizations of comparable size and age and complexity as yours, IT can actually be, if it is not modernizing, in many of the ways you've already mentioned, be the anchor that pulls back against the ship as it attempts to either turn left or right or to speed up, as the case may be. I'm hearing through your answers a number of areas where you have modernized things. And I know actually from past conversations as well as things I've read from you in the past, that you aim to make IT a source of speed, the very opposite of what I'm talking about, to be actually on the rudder and to be operating the engine to some extent, to pivot quickly and seize opportunities more readily. Can you peel back the onion a little bit further on that topic and some of the things that you have done through your tenure in order to ensure that IT is a source of speed as opposed to the opposite?
Yeah, great. I mean, funny, you know, of all the things we've talked about so far, Peter, this is the area where we spend the most of our time, right? So first of all, I would say there are many facets to the transformation that we've been under. The key components are our agile transformation, our journey to the cloud, our ability to do that with our business. So those three things, in my mind, provide a multiplier effect that you would not get if you don't do all three at the same time. So The first thing I would say is we started a journey several years ago to change the way we build software. And that change was not just a change in moving from waterfall process approach to an agile set of teams. It also came with dramatically changing the tools that we were using. So, you know, if we had gone back 4 or 5 years, we would have been, all the development tools and technologies we would have been using came from, you know, the big tech vendors, right? Whether that's IBM or Microsoft or whatever, and everybody was using a similar development tool set. These days, right, we're using all the modern open source based technologies, whether that's the Node.js and the React and all of the flexible stuff up front. We're also using all of the pipeline technologies, you know, whether that's Bamboo or Jenkins, and driving through all the Cloud Foundry technologies and all the container technologies that you read about today. Those are all the mainstay of how we're building new technology. You're right, we have a lot of legacy stuff, and we're very focused on figuring out how we either replace it over time or reduce it to be simply data repositories that we can build the flexible stuff we need all around it. And that's been a very interesting journey. I won't say that it's been without its bumps, but as we've gone through the last 3 or 4 years, we're now at probably 90% of our teams operate in an agile fashion. We no longer work on the, you know, design, development, test, implement, learn. Now we expect all of our platforms to be built in an iterative fashion, whether that's the new stuff with minimum viable product, or whether it's even the major back office work that we're doing. So even as we look to replace our general ledgers and HR platforms around the world, we do that in an agile fashion, despite the fact that the technology may be deployed in a number of different implementations. We bring the platforms alive piece by piece, and that gives us a lot of confidence that we're going to hit the mark and that we're not going to wake up 2 years into a program and figure out that, oh, the goalposts have moved while we were doing our work. So the first thing is the agile transformation. We've been doing that not just with the technology teams, but we do that directly with our business partners. So the teams now consist of product owners. Many times the product owners are from our business, and they help us with the prioritization of the product development, the platform evolution, the as we call it, the backlog prioritization. We continue to evaluate every couple of weeks, are we building the right things? We focus on instrumenting that so that we hear from our customers directly what's working, what's not working. And then when we see something that they like, we scale that and drive it forward. And that's made a big difference. And we now deploy that in all our, I mentioned earlier, our customer journeys. We do that entirely with these agile tool sets, agile mindset, and with the business in this agile fashion. It's taken some time. You know, people have had to retool, learn new technologies, learn about the new approaches to building software, and get comfortable with this approach of applying capacity against our key business goals. So now, rather than issue an edict or a directive that a project must be complete by the end of the year, we align capacity many times 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 agile squads associated with driving key business metrics. So whether that's customer satisfaction, or whether that's penetration of digital technologies for claims, or no matter what it is, we now have our teams focused, both the technology folks and the business folks, on moving the dial on the key business metrics. Not necessarily, okay, did I hit a particular stage gate and finish the design of a project, right? So that's taken a lot of different mindset changes. Funny thing is, despite the fact that it's been a challenge along the way, what we now see is that our teams, the associates and the software engineers and all the folks on the teams, they really love working in this way, and because it gives a lot more immediate feedback on the work they're doing, how our customers interact with it, and really gives us some you know, fuel to move on at a faster pace. So, agile is one. The second one I mentioned is is our move to the cloud. A number of years ago, we made a commitment that we wanted to move our tech platforms out of our own data centers and out onto the public cloud. At that time, I think we were less than 1% in the cloud. We're now probably in the 24-25% range. By the end of this year, we'll be 40%. And another couple of years down the line here, we'll be hopefully 100% of all of our stuff out there, Peter. So that's not to say that it's simple, right? Many of the platforms won't go there initially, and it'll take more time. But our goal is to make sure that we can capitalize on the variable cost models and the immediate provisioning processes and capabilities that are now evolving in these platforms. And, you know, I mentioned the agile model. The other end of that spectrum is to be able to deploy immediately and scale our environments as we see the demand grow, and to move along to capture opportunities and eliminate the supply chain and manufacturing lead times for these kind of products. So not alone that, but we see some amazing new technologies begin to evolve out there as well that help us with our AI and machine learning programs. And we think that that's going to be the way to go. The last thing I want to do is build out massive amount of storage and compute to process these the kind of data volumes that we're seeing and the growth in those areas over time. Again, we'll continue to have our own stuff for a while, but our strategy and our ultimate goal is to capitalize on those capabilities and really direct all of our investments in technology to be focused on our customers, focused on the experience, and to rapidly change to take advantage of the opportunities as they come into view.
Very interesting. I'd love to talk to you further about some of those trends like artificial intelligence and machine learning, for example, among
sure.
others. But before we do, though, I want to just linger on the transformation you just described a bit longer. You know, you mentioned mm-hmm. that you're now at a place where people, the team, recognizes that this is the right way to do things, and it sounds like it's very energizing for them. But this really, it amounts to a pretty significant cultural change that you embarked on. And I can only imagine in the early stages of it, it's only human nature, frankly, that if you're going to tell people the way that you've done things for years is going to change, maybe even become irrelevant. And so we need to develop new programs and then operate mm-hmm. by those. Can you talk a bit about how you enacted that cultural change? How did you bring sure. people along in that journey to make sure they reached that destination that you've described, where they recognize the new way of doing things is in fact the right way?
No, Peter, you're right on in terms of as we look to essentially change the profile and the skill sets of all of the teams. We started off by telling people we were going to do it. So a couple of years back, we created a document that we called our Technology Manifesto, which is basically a 6-page document that we said, here's where we're going. We're going to change. We're going to need to change. People are going to need to learn new skills. We're not going to be using the same technology. We're not going to be using the same processes. And that it's going to require everybody on our team to make a personal commitment to learning. Now, you mentioned earlier on that we were a 107-year-old company, and we certainly had a lot of folks on our team and still have many folks on our team who have been here quite some time. And you know, for some folks who've been doing things in one way for a very long time, it's more difficult to contemplate, okay, I got to go learn something new, completely different, and change my skills and make a commitment to doing that. One of the things we did was we talked about the technologies and what we were going to need to compete in the marketplace, and laid out a picture for the kind of skills people were going to need to be able to learn. We ramped up our self-paced learning, and we've seen a huge improvement and increase in adoption of people wanting to learn about agile, wanting to learn about cloud, wanting to learn about pipeline technologies and continuous integration and continuous deployment. And on this journey, we've been on to get 88 or 90% of our teams working in an agile fashion. Everybody's had to take one road or another, and I'll explain that a little bit. For some people, for some of the newer folks who are, you know, coming out of college and coming into the team from either undergrad or graduate degree programs, or folks who've been in startups or other companies who've been using these technologies, it was a simple shift. So they came in with many of the things that we needed. For many of the folks who have been working on some of the older technologies, it's been amazing. It started off slowly, and people were concerned about it and worried about it. But as we laid out the the goals and the role and the path for learning, people eventually got there and understood that this was going to be something that was going to offer them, if you like, a new lease of life and a new way to kind of expand their horizons and to move into the new technologies and to build out these compelling experiences for our customers. There were also some innovative things that we did, Peter. I don't know, you may have heard about them. Other folks have talked about this in the past, but we deployed a program called Go for Code, where we identified several hundred of our analyst resources, people who hadn't necessarily been writing code in the past. And we basically sent them to coding school, immersion programs, where some cohorts went to a front-end development classes, others went to back-end or API developments, and other folks were focused on all the new technologies. And we put north of 300 people through that, probably had a 90% success rate in terms of people coming back and joining our agile squads as software developers on the junior side, but very excited and learning and making a contribution to our approach, to the new approach. So we had a multi-pronged approach to helping people make that journey, whether it was self-paced, our courses, our immersion programs that we sent people to. We essentially probably changed the profile of the team dramatically over the last few years. We actually set ourselves a goal, one of our bold, audacious moves, as we call them, to have at least 75% of our team actually writing code. And if we had looked at those numbers a couple of years before that, Peter, we would have been in the 50% maximum range, right? So when you think of people who, their whole life was writing, hundreds of pages of Word documents outlining requirements, or people who were doing a whole range of manual testing and all those kind of things. So we've essentially transformed those roles and moved many of the people who were doing that into the software development areas focused on building out the agile squads that we talked about a little bit about earlier. So, what are the key things? So the key things are try to optimize our communications, tell people where we're going and why, lay out some tangible goals, which we did. You know, we laid out goals for the kind of the percentage of people we wanted writing code. We laid out goals for the percentage of our workloads we wanted to move out onto the cloud. We laid out goals for the number of and the volume of our applications that we needed to enable daily or regular deployments into production, and a whole range of others as well. This helped people kind of internalize how we were going to measure success, and help people kind of focus on how they could change and learn, and how we were going to help them along that journey. Obviously, not everything is in an agile fashion or on the new technology. We still run large parts of our businesses on some of the older stuff, but we're all about figuring out how we make sure that those older technologies don't become anchors. And we're focused on replacing some of them, refactoring others, putting others into container solutions, but all about moving into this iterative model of thinking about how we improve things piece by piece, step by step.
That's excellent. Great overview, and certainly highlights the how intentional one must be in bringing the culture, bringing one's people along in the journey you've described. I do want to return, as you began to allude to, some of the exciting new technologies that you're beginning to use and sound like are there making their way onto your strategic roadmap. You mentioned artificial intelligence, machine learning. Would love to maybe hear a little bit more about how you're using those and any other sorts of new tech trends that you're hoping to surf in the coming year or two.
Sure. We're very excited about those. So we still have a long way to go, Peter, on understanding exactly how to deploy all of the AI and the new technologies. But let me give you a couple of examples. So we've been pretty successful in one of our functions where we can examine some of the incoming bills from our legal partners and the legal firms we do business with. And we're able to identify potential anomalies or things that may not be correct in those bills. And rather than have 30 or 40 auditors examining these, we've now built out AI-based platforms that are able to examine the bills, look for anomalies or things that might need to be changed. And we've built on the back end of that a robotic process automation solution that helps make those changes so that we can make sure that everything is the way it needs to be. We did that based on some of the new technologies out there, used things like TensorFlow and some of the Microsoft platforms, the Azure-based platforms for data science. And those platforms are improving day by day as we're tuning them and teaching them what to look for. We're also obviously using these technologies in our underwriting spaces. We're trying to understand how we optimize underwriting, looking for the variables that are key. And so we're learning a lot in those areas. And some of the new technologies are really beginning to make an impact. A lot of people have talked about the robotics process automation stuff. We've deployed that in several places. We found it to be helpful in many cases. But I'm also cautious about technologies like RPA, Peter, where if you deploy it in the wrong place, it can become a glue or a cement layer around some of the old technology and kind of prevent you from, really moving forward with your flexible technology architectures that we're going to need for the future. So it's really important, I think, to make sure that as we deploy the new technologies, whether they're AI and machine learning or RPA or whatever it is, that we do that in a way that we're not going to constrain our ability to upgrade our platforms in the future. We also have teams looking at building out our capabilities for augmented and virtual reality, where we're building out some fun capabilities with some of the teams. We're piloting headsets that we can use to look around environments and identify things that might be risks for people being injured or something like that. So we're piloting that. It's early days, but some interesting insights that we're learning there already. We have a key partnership with MIT that we're launching over the next several years, where we're going to work with many of the faculty over there to help us understand how we can optimize our use of AI and think about what, not just where we can use it, but what the implications are for the workforce, depending on how we use it as well. So we're conscious about that, and we want to be planful about the kind of skills we're going to need and where we're going to need them, both in the U.S. and around the world. One area that you might be interested in, I mentioned this whole digital experience layer. One of the things we've done, Peter, is we've been using this platform, an internal platform that we've built out over the last several years, to enhance the employee experience here at Liberty Mutual. So everything from onboarding new employees to taking mini surveys to helping people understand how much time off they still have in the bank, to giving them access to their pay stubs every 2 weeks, to automatically allowing them to approve expenses or approve people moving from one role to another at this digital layer, which is both mobile enabled and WebKit enabled. And that prevents it doesn't require all of our folks to go back and log into all of the legacy systems. So whether they're the HR platforms or financial platforms or purchase order platforms or whatever. And over the last several years, we've effectively saved tens of millions of dollars in productivity. And not alone that, our employees have been pretty excited about it. So all this is a long-winded way of kind of telling you that one of the exciting things we've been working on is this product called WorkGrid. We launched a little company, and we've productized this employee experience platform, which has all the things I mentioned, plus some AI-based chatbots. It all runs out on the public cloud, and we already have some customers on the platform. So what I think is fun is that we've taken some of the software engineering platforms that we've built internally and turned them into external products. And if you go out to our website out there, www.workgrid.com, you'll notice that the platform has already won 5 or 6 of the major industry category awards over the last year, and looks quite promising. And it's an interesting offshoot for us as we continue to evolve our engineering practices and look for ways to delight not just our customers, but our employees.
Very interesting. And so your team is now getting involved in really building new businesses, new products as well, like the revenue side of the innovation equation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we're learning in that regard, but, you know, the early indications are pretty positive on this one, you know, and we're excited about it, you know. So when the industry tells you you got something interesting, that's kind of nice.
Excellent. Well, James McLennan, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great to hear about your experiences across your nearly 11 years as Chief Information Officer of Liberty Mutual, the transformation that you've led, and some of the fruit of that transformation. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Peter. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week with my guest will be Sanjay Sringapur, the Chief Information Officer of E&J Gallo Winery.